Libby Gore on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The wonderful thing about life is that it's getting more and more open in terms of the conversations we can have. And so we decided to have a conversation about bipolar disorder or the bipolar condition. Because on the Sunday show, we realised whilst we hear about it all the time and that it can strike anyone, regardless of how rich you are or how powerful you are or wherever you may come from, we didn't actually know what it is. So here's a conversation for you. What is bipolar disorder with Dr. Ashwin Ritesh?
Libby, I think it's a really important conversation to have because it's a relatively poorly understood condition. And so absolutely happy to be here to be able to talk about it.
Can you explain to me what happens to the brain in order to create this condition?
The tricky issue is that we don't know exactly what happens in the brain, as with several of these mental health conditions. Firstly, bipolar is a mental health condition, or probably a group of mental health conditions, where people have these distinctive episodes of elevated mood that we call mania or hypomania. Mm-hmm. And you know, during these periods, people talk a lot, they have loads of energy, they have racing thoughts, can't sleep, and these kind of episodes last for kind of days or weeks together.
So it's a heightened reality.
It's a heightened state of energy, mood, and activity where your sense of reality can be altered. And in fact, people often can have a very inflated view of themselves and can lose, to varying degrees, your kind of awareness of where you're at. Mm-hmm. And so these kind of episodes are what define bipolar. But also people with bipolar have problems with depression and anxiety, and that can be much more of a problem in day-to-day life. But it's the manic episodes or the hypomanic episodes that make bipolar. And I probably also want to make the point that that these manic episodes or hypomanic episodes might sound like, you know, like a good time in our lives, you know, like the times when we fell in love or went away on a holiday. And but they're not. They're much more than that. These episodes are quite intense, and they're quite different from people's own usual selves. They last for days or weeks. People take unusual risks, and very typically people don't sleep very much.
Right. So it is characterized, bipolar, by the manic episodes. It's not characterized by the depression, but more by the mania.
That's right. So something like, say, one in five of us can experience major depression at some point in our life. But it's probably only 1 in 100 or 2 in 100 who can have the full bipolar picture. And so loads of people have depression, but it often requires this kind of movement or this change from depression to high mood phases.
The second phase.
That's exactly right. So these periods that are quite the opposite of depression that come before or after or separately from depression or sometimes together with depression, and that's what makes bipolar.
How do you distinguish bipolar? I guess they're accentuated moods then, aren't they? That's how you would just distinguish it from the ebb and flow of a passionate life.
That's a very, very good question. In fact, you know, mood intensity or you know, feeling passionate about certain moments in life can happen, you know, to all of us, but also in other mental health conditions. But with bipolar, these intense mood periods last for days or weeks. And that's where it's different from, I guess, experiencing intense emotions, you know, that we all do at various points in time.
Right. Dr. Ashwin Ritesh is a consultant psychiatrist with clinical research and academic roles at Origin. I'm pronouncing that correctly?
That's right, you
and
are.
What does Origin do?
So Origin's a youth mental health facility. We're based out in northwestern Melbourne, and we work with young people with a whole range of mental health difficulties, both depression and anxiety are the kind of more common mental health conditions, but as well as the more serious mental health conditions like bipolar, psychosis, personality disorders, and severe depression. Mm. And so we've got services all across northwestern Melbourne. And so young people's mental health is our core business.
So when we're talking about bipolar then, are you seeing a greater diagnosis of this? Are our living conditions placing so much pressure on the brain? Because I know you didn't want to go into what caused it.
So maybe this is a good point to sort of go into, you know, what causes it. And so maybe...
Is it an environmental thing or is it a chemical thing in the brain?
It's probably got to do with a combination of susceptibility to kind of environmental risk factors. So most of the susceptibility to bipolar probably is related to genes that drive brain development or functioning.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly in the last 20 years, we've understood a great deal more about those genes. And the story of those, you know, that genetic risk is somewhat complex. I'm happy to go into that if needed. But you're absolutely right to say that there are environmental factors, and very commonly sleep deprivation or stress or drugs or sometimes prescribed medications can all push people who are vulnerable or people who are susceptible into an episode. And so it's often, like with many mental health conditions and somewhat like with life itself, it's often a combination of the genes and the brains that we inherit and how that interacts with the world around us.
So what are the different types of bipolar? Is it one thing, or can you have subsets within the greater whole?
Really, really good question. So very broadly, we talk about types 1 and 2 of bipolar, which largely have to do with the severity of these manic episodes or hypomanic episodes. So people with type 1 bipolar have manic episodes, which are much more severe and longer lasting. And type 2 bipolar is associated with hypomanic episodes or sort of less severe episodes that are shorter lasting. But it's probably also useful to remember that, you know, especially with the story of the genes that we were talking about before, that there's probably a whole range of conditions that come under what we call bipolar, and a whole range of susceptibilities, and that it's probably not one thing, and it's probably a whole lot of different problems in the brain.
Muriel has called in. Let me just include her in the conversation. Morning, Muriel.
Good morning.
Thanks for ringing.
It's fine. Wasn't easy, but yes.
Talk to me. Tell me.
I was diagnosed with bipolar about 3 years ago. Previous to that, I'd had hypomanic and very severe.
I just need you to move that phone away from your neck or your mouth because It's a little bit muffled. I understand.
I'm in Elmore, that's why. I've had both hypomanic and very depressive episodes.
Mm-hmm.
It's only because of my family who actually supported me through the very depressive episodes before I was actually diagnosed.
It's hard to talk about.
It's very hard for me to say and acknowledge. Like, I try and talk about it a lot. I try and tell people, yes, you know, I had been diagnosed with this condition. And I'm not ashamed of it. It's just there. I think probably my mother, my grandmother had it, my mother had it, but it wasn't diagnosed then, and I think they went through very hard times. Like, I have medication. I've had times when I've been sleepless and so manic, I just go, 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 go. But then there's always the other side of that. You can just tilter and, you know, pivot and go back the other way. So my family, I've got a daughter who's a paramedic, a daughter who's a physio, and they keep quite a close eye on me. COVID has made that quite tricky.
Quite tricky, yeah.
Yeah.
Muriel, can I just bring Dr. Ashwin back into the conversation?
Yes.
Dr. Ashwin, everything that Muriel's saying, obviously that is such a common conversation within your circles in that it's hard to talk about, and yet it's so present in everyday life that it's not like it. You can put it in a cupboard.
Absolutely. And Libby, you were talking earlier about the blockages and sort of the memory difficulties as well. And so very broadly speaking, it is very hard to talk about this, and often as Muriel was saying, it is absolutely challenging to sort of bring some very personal difficulties out in the open, even with people that you trust and friends and family. But then, as you were saying before, there can also be problems with memory, sometimes during a manic episode or immediately after. But sometimes some of these memory problems can also persist. So sometimes, you know, talking about this and or bringing people into this conversation can be an emotional barrier, but also sometimes a barrier with respect to memory and the brain as well.
Muriel, thank you very much for ringing. I really appreciate you getting involved and kicking it off, because it's really hard to know how to talk about it. So thank you for opening up that conversation for us.
Yeah, all right.
Appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Ashwin, how do you find, picking up from what Muriel says, the right fit of medical practitioner who can help you discover what you need to function? You know, is bipolar easily diagnosable, or is it? Does it go into that glad bag of, for want of a better way of asking it? Remember when chronic fatigue syndrome first happened and everyone went, "Oh, right, this is the new thing," or RSI, "Oh, this is the new thing." Is bipolar a definite thing, or is it something that is used to describe a whole range of instances that are going on in the brain that one just can't get a handle on?
Okay, it's a really interesting question, Libby. In fact, the idea of bipolar or mania probably goes back to maybe the first century AD, where Aretaeus of Cappadocia described, you know, some of these manic episodes in a way that we would understand very clearly. So, you know, these episodes or these problems have been definitely a problem of humanity for a very long time. And it's that there's obviously much greater access to mental health literacy. People understand these problems much better and are looking out for care. Now, in terms of identifying bipolar, as you say, it can be complicated, because unlike problems like psychosis, where the delusions or hallucinations are much more frankly different from reality, problems of mania or hypomania can seem like people's usual selves or accentuations of their usual selves. So it can be harder to diagnose, but I think it is quite possible to be able to tell your story to a psychiatrist or a mental health professional and be able to sort of talk about these episodes if they are different from your usual self, and for mental health professionals to be able to recognize it. And in that sense, it's probably not as much of a rat bag of problems as, you know, some of the examples that you may have mentioned before. And in fact, there was some literature that suggested that among all of the DSM conditions, mania is one of the most recognizable condition and very hard to mistake. The problem with mania is that these episodes sort of come and go, and once the episodes disappear, then all you've got is your word for it or your family members talking about it. So it does require mental health professionals to sort of stop and
observe.
Yes, indeed, and to ask some questions about what was happening a month ago, or what was happening when you were doing all this. And I think mental health professionals are getting much, much better at it. And to answer your final question about finding the right fit, I think as with many of these problems and as with many of these health problems, I think it is important to find the right person. And sometimes it does require sort of changing or getting a second opinion, but I think most people eventually get there.
Yeah, and follow your instincts.
Exactly.
Final question. Can you get over it? Or if, you know, can it subside with a change of living conditions or environment or people around you? Can you alleviate it, or is it something you need to learn to live with?
For the most part, it is something that you have to live with. Once it is at a problematic severity, but it is also something that can be alleviated, and medications can have a role, and psychological therapies can have a role, and friends and families can have a role. And once we get all of these ingredients of good treatment right, it does alleviate the severity of the problems, and many people, most people, go on to live happy, productive lives. And you know, so it is something that I see as being treatable, and definitely something to not be too scared of.
Just take it in your stride, go and get some help, trust yourself.
That's exactly right.
Ashwin, thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.